And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Dan Friedel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Recently in Beirut, a small group of people cleaned oxygen machines to send to those in need. The move was the latest in a series of activities by a Lebanese group trying to serve the public during the country's health and economic crises. Melissa Fatallah is one of the founders of Beitna Beitek, which in Arabic means "Our home is your home." No one is exempt from COVID. Nobody. Nobody has superpower immunity, she told the Associated Press. Immunity means the power to keep yourself from being infected by a disease. Raising more than $27,000, the group has placed 48 oxygen machines with those in need across the country. Beitna Beitek began at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic with a very different project. The group found homes for medical workers who were worried about bringing the virus to their families. During Lebanon's first lockdown in March, the group housed 750 workers in different places. Chloe Roche works at a government hospital in Beirut. She has been living in housing provided by the group since the start of the pandemic. She was worried about putting her family at risk. If I got COVID, or anyone my age got COVID, we could survive, Roche said. But our families, no. The first place Roche stayed was damaged when another disaster hit Beirut, the August 4th explosion at the city's port. The blast killed more than 200 people, injured 6,000 others, and destroyed thousands of homes. Roche was not harmed. She moved to another place provided by Beitna Beitek. She now shares a 4-bedroom apartment with 3 other medical workers who work in different hospitals around the city. The apartment was donated to Beitna Beitek by a wealthy individual who wanted to help those risking their lives to fight the virus. The same person donated several other properties around Beirut for the same purpose. After the port explosion, Beitna Beitek moved to increase its efforts to help those whose homes had been damaged. It placed them in temporary housing while it helped raise money to fix their homes. Within 24 hours of the call for housing, 6 apartments were donated. Beitna Beitek grew out of a need for services for frontline workers in Lebanon, Fatallah said. As far as the government is concerned, we don't have a government. Let's just get that out of the way, she said. Lebanon's health sector has faced difficulties in the past, and the problems got worse after the explosion. Doctors are working many long days in place of health workers infected with the virus. More than 2,300 Lebanese healthcare workers have been infected since February, the country's Order of Physicians reports. Lebanon has more than 14,000 medical doctors and 17,000 nurses, but many doctors have left the country partly because of an economic crisis that began before the pandemic. After the explosion, Lebanon saw a large increase in COVID-19 infections that only worsened by the end of 2020. This forced Betna Betek to put some of its work on hold. The number of donors also decreased. Still, the group has continued to work through new virus-related restrictions that started in mid-January. Fethullah has no plans to stop her work. We took it upon ourselves because of the greater good, because of the bigger picture, because of the country and the citizens. We took it upon ourselves, she said. I'm John Russell.
Japan began giving COVID-19 vaccinations to its people on Wednesday. Many other developed countries began vaccination campaigns back in December. Japan is behind other countries because it asked drug companies to carry out special clinical trials with Japanese people. The country only gave permission for the vaccine on Sunday. The delay has some people worried that not enough Japanese people will be vaccinated before the proposed start of the delayed 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. The games are now set to begin on July 23rd, after being delayed by 1 year because of the coronavirus health crisis. The first people in Japan to get the vaccine are medical workers, old people, and people with health problems. The rest of the Japanese public may be able to get a vaccine in the late spring or early summer. Japan has a population of 127 million people. At the current rate, not enough people will have the vaccine by the start of the Olympics to make sure everyone is safe. Officials are struggling to fight opposition among citizens to holding the games. Recent public opinion studies in Japan found that about 80% of those questioned support canceling the games completely or delaying them again. But Japanese leaders, including Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, say they want to move forward with the games. They say the Olympics will be proof of human victory against the pandemic. Japan also wants to show the world it can hold the Olympics before China runs the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. Japan has dealt with the pandemic better than many Western countries, but a recent increase in cases has caused concern. Currently, some parts of Japan are under stronger restrictions than they faced during most of 2020. Japan is still doing well compared to many other countries. About one person out of every 100,000 is testing positive for the virus. In the United States, that number is almost 25 out of 100,000. Taro Kono is Japan's vaccine minister. He answered criticism about the slow start to the vaccination program by saying it was important to show the Japanese people it would be safe. Japanese leaders say they are working to develop more vaccines in Japan instead of using doses from other countries. More vaccine will arrive next week. Almost 4 million healthcare workers are set to be vaccinated in March. Starting in April, the 36 million Japanese people aged 65 and older will be able to receive their shots. I'm Dan Friedel.
Researchers have used artificial intelligence methods in an effort to predict which animals might develop new kinds of coronaviruses that affect humans. Scientists believe the new coronavirus spreading around the world, which causes the disease COVID-19, likely started in bats. It then jumped to another animal before infecting humans. One way to prevent new pandemics is for experts to identify which animals in different parts of the world are more likely to develop coronaviruses. Researchers involved in the study say one way new coronaviruses form is when two different versions of the virus infect one animal. When this happens, genetic material from the viruses recombines or mixes in a cell. This can result in a new coronavirus version. The research involved a computer algorithm that examined data about the genetic structure of coronaviruses and information about different mammals. An algorithm is a set of steps that are followed in order to complete a computer process. Some algorithms are powered by machine learning, a form of AI. The new study identifies a large number of mammals that could be future carriers of coronaviruses, which can infect both animals and humans. The results of the research were recently published in Nature Communications. One of the project's lead researchers was Maya Warda. She is with the Institute of Infection, Veterinary and Ecological Sciences at the University of Liverpool. She said in a statement that until now there has not been a lot of research on how different mammals are affected by different coronaviruses. But such information could offer insights into where viral recombination might occur, Warda added. The machine learning system examined 411 different coronavirus versions and 876 possible mammal species. The goal was to identify the mammals most likely to be co-infected and possibly carry new coronaviruses. The results suggested there are about 11 times more links between mammal species and coronavirus versions than had been identified in the past. The system also predicted 40 times more mammal species that can be infected with four or more different kinds of coronaviruses than have been observed to date. Marcus Blagrove was co-leader of the research. He said results of the study can help scientists better understand the new coronavirus, which has already developed into different versions. Blagrove noted that coronaviruses often recombine when they infect a host and that the new coronavirus is highly infectious to humans. Therefore, the most immediate threat to public health is recombination of other coronaviruses with SARS-CoV-2, he said. SARS-CoV-2 is the scientific name for the new coronavirus. When looking at the current coronavirus, the team said the machine learning system had identified hosts in which SARS-CoV-2 recombination could happen. It predicted at least 126 non-human species in which the new coronavirus could be found. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Germany's attack on Poland and the start of World War II in Europe presented a problem for Americans in September of 1939. The United States, by law, was neutral, and few Americans had any desire to fight in another world war. But most Americans did not like Germany's Nazi leader, Adolf Hitler. They hoped for victory for Britain, France, and the other Allied powers. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt made this clear in a radio broadcast to Americans soon after the war began.
The overwhelming masses of our people seek peace. Peace at home. And the kind of peace in other lands which will not jeopardize our peace at home. We have certain ideas and certain ideals of national safety, and we must act to preserve that safety today and to preserve the safety of our children in future years. That safety is and will be bound up with the safety of the Western Hemisphere and of the seas adjacent thereto. We seek to keep war from our own firesides by keeping war from coming to the Americas.
He praised the British and other allies. Finally, the president called on Congress to change the neutrality laws that prevented him from sending arms to the Allies to help them fight Germany. Congress agreed to change the laws so foreign nations could buy American arms. In the months that followed, Hitler and his allies claimed one victory after another. German and Soviet troops captured Poland quickly in September of 1939. Then Soviet forces invaded the small Baltic nations of Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. In late November, they attacked Finland. Fighting between Finland and the Soviet Union continued through the winter until Finland accepted Russia's demands. Fighting grew even more fierce the following spring in 1940. Germany attacked Denmark and Norway, defeating them easily. In May, German forces struck like lightning through Belgium and Holland. Within one day, they were in France. British and French forces were unable to stop the Germans from moving deep into northern France. The British finally had to flee from the European continent. They sailed back to Britain from the French town of Dunkirk. German soldiers marched through France, and Italian forces joined them by invading France from the south. Soon, Paris fell.
Target. gilt den Verwundeten, die ihr Blut für diesen herrlichen Sieg gaben, der überall an der Front wie in der Heimat unbeschreiblich.
These are German newsreel narrators describing German troops entering Paris and the fall of the French government.
Der Ministerpräsident der neu gebildeten französischen Regierung, Marshal Pétain, hat in einer Rundfunkanstalt.
A German supporter, Marshal Pétain, took control of the French government, and France, beaten and crushed, was forced to sign a peace treaty with Hitler. Now it was just Britain alone against Hitler and his Axis allies. Only the English Channel separated the British people from a German army that seemed unbeatable. British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain was forced to resign. The British people turned to a new leader, Winston Churchill.
I speak to you for the first time as Prime Minister in a solemn hour for the life of our country, of our empire, of our allies, and above all, of the cause of freedom. A tremendous battle is raging in France and Flanders. The Germans, by a remarkable combination of air bombing and heavily armored tanks, have broken through the French defenses north of the Maginot Line, and strong columns of their armored vehicles are ravaging the open country, which for the first day or two was without defenders. They have penetrated deeply and spread alarm and confusion in their track.
Churchill would prove to be strong and brave in the long months ahead. The British would need strong leadership. Hitler wasted no time in launching a fierce air attack on Britain. Throughout the summer, German and British planes fought above the English Channel. All of this military action had an important effect on American popular opinion. War and neutrality were no longer just ideas to be discussed and debated. Now they were real concerns, real events. Fascist troops, led by a dictator in Berlin, were defeating one friendly democracy after another, and Soviet forces were on the march too. Most Americans still wanted neutrality. But how long could America remain at peace? And was peace worth the cost of just sitting by and watching friends like France and Britain being bombed and invaded? Other issues melted away as Americans began to consider what to do about the darkening world situation. Some Americans, led by newspaper publisher William Allen White, called for the United States to help Britain immediately. But other groups, like the America First Committee, demanded that the United States stay out of another bloody European conflict. The struggle between those who wanted to help Britain and those who wanted to remain neutral did not follow traditional party lines. Some of the strongest supporters of Roosevelt's foreign policies were Republicans. Some members of his own Democratic Party opposed his policies. Even so, foreign policy was one of the main issues in the presidential election campaign of 1940. The Democrats once again nominated Franklin Roosevelt for president. The Republicans had several popular candidates who were interested in campaigning against Roosevelt. At first, it seemed that these candidates would fight it out in a bitter nominating convention in Philadelphia. But to everyone's surprise, a little-known candidate named Wendell Willkie suddenly gained a great deal of support and won the nomination.
For the building of an adequate defense, so that no dictator, however strong, may seek to strike, for the unity of our people, for calling again America to its great tradition of progress, I pledge myself to you, and I ask each of you to join with me in this great crusade.
Willkie was a tough candidate. He was friendly, a good businessman, and a strong speaker. He seemed honest, and he seemed to understand foreign policy. Most importantly, Wilkie had a progressive record on many social issues. He was not the kind of traditional conservative Republican that Roosevelt had defeated so easily in his first two campaigns. Instead, Wilkie could claim to represent the average American just as well as Roosevelt, and he offered the excitement of a change in leadership. While Roosevelt and Wilkie began their campaign battles with words, German and British planes were fighting real battles with bullets over the English Channel. Winston Churchill sent a desperate message to Roosevelt. The British Prime Minister said Britain could not fight alone much longer. It needed help immediately. Roosevelt did not want to take steps toward war just before an election, but neither could he refuse such an urgent appeal from the British leader. Roosevelt and Wilkie discussed the situation. Wilkie agreed not to criticize Roosevelt when the president sent 50 ships to the British Navy. He also supported Roosevelt's order for American young men to give their names to Army officials so they could be called up if fighting began. In this way, Roosevelt and Wilkie tried to keep America's growing involvement in the war from becoming a major political issue in the election. President Roosevelt won the election of 1940. He won 27 million votes to 22 million for Wilkie. This made Roosevelt the first and only president in American history to win a third term in the White House. The Constitution was later changed to limit presidents to two terms. Soon after the election, President Roosevelt received a letter from Winston Churchill. The British Prime Minister wrote that Britain urgently needed more arms and planes to fight Germany. Roosevelt agreed. He went to the Congress to plead for more aid to Britain. He said the United States should change its neutral policy because Britain was fighting a common enemy of democracy. Roosevelt also said the United States could avoid war if Britain was strong enough to defeat Germany by itself. Congress agreed, after a fierce debate, to increase aid to Britain. And in the weeks and months that followed, the United States moved closer and closer to open war with Germany. In March of 1941, Roosevelt allowed British ships to come to American ports to be repaired. In June, the United States seized ships under German control. It also took over German and Italian funds in American banks. Open fighting could not be prevented with this increase in tension between Germany and the United States. In September 1941, a German submarine fired at an American ship. The ship was not damaged, but a number of American troops were killed in other naval incidents that followed. By the end of 1941, the United States and Germany were almost at war. Even so, most Americans continued to hope for peace. In fact, few Americans could guess that war was just days away. The first blow would come not from Germany, however, but from Japan.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.